where we used to hear it. And so I'm asking tonight for a financial commitment. Now this, I understand two wallets were lost earlier tonight. If they aren't found, if no one calls for them, I'll take them. I'm asking for a financial commitment. Democracy now in exile needs our support. There's a tremendous commitment they have made and also a tremendous financial commitment. And so I'm going to start tonight by asking if there's someone here who can give to Democracy Now in Exile at the level of $500 or more. And I'm way up here, I can hardly see, so you're going to have to kind of stand up and go like this at $500 or more. If we get a few of these, wait a moment. I see one back there at how much? $500. Let's hear it. Jan Goodman, is that Jan Goodman and Jerry Manpearl? May I ask, is this at $500? $500, compañera, muchas gracias. La lucha continua. Fantastico. Yes, make out the checks to Don White Foundation. No, that's not what you should do. They make them out to, actually, we make the checks out to IMA/World Peace Report. War and Peace Report. You know, brother, don't leave me. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, we have $1,000 for Democracy Now in Exile. Are you, come up here with your good eyes. I need someone with good eyes. I'm finding that I'm not focusing. Can you go like this at $500 or more? Is there someone else at $500 or more? Do you see anyone waving frantically? Don't bat any flies away because it's going to be expensive. $250. Just go like this at $250. Here's $250 over here. We have $1,250. Now we have some things, some premiums here. We have t-shirts. We have t-shirts just like the one Amy gave Danny Glover. We have t-shirts for those people who have pledged at this level. If you can give at $250, would you kind of give us the old wave? $250. Amy will sign the t-shirt if you sign the check. Anyone at $250? Where? Here. Oh, right down here. $250. Thank you very much. Make checks payable to IMA, War and Peace Report. $250? $250. Over here. Here's a $250. I wish I had my calculator. I think we're approaching $2,000. Anyone else at $250? Blaze, help me. And $250. And one over here at $250. And $250 down here. And $250 over there, look. Oh, I can't see clearly. I need $250. Muchas gracias, compañero. Thank you so much. More at $250. Are you saying $250? $250. Let's give these people a little bit of applause here. Let's get the vital juices running. $250. Bernard, come up here. Say a few words. Bernard, we're going to auction off your coat, and if you'll sign it, okay?
Okay, we've gotten rid of the $250. Is there anybody else with $250? Okay. Now we're going to go to $150. That should be most of the rest of you. I'm here to talk to the peasants. $150? There's one. He started it off. We need a few more. Come on, don't let this side outdo that side. $150?
Does anyone have a deed to their house?
Okay. All right, we'll take it down to $100. Those of you with $100.
Okay.
$100.
$100.
Okay, in the back, there's some more. Over here. Okay.
There's another one down there in front.
Down here in front. Okay, make sure you get those people with the $100. Now we're getting close to the folks who live in my neighborhood.
No, no, wait. One more. Bernard, I just have to say one thing. The committee in solidarity with the people of El Salvador, CISPAS, is not a rich organization. But when we remember how the original Pacifica Network and KPFK gave a voice to the people of El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Guatemala, and when we know that we can bring back the days when the voices of the people of those Central American countries are going to be heard, even though we're poor, we're going to give $100 from CISPAS as well.
Okay. We haven't exhausted all the hundreds, have we? Right over there? Another 100 over there? Another 100 over this side. The people up there have been very, very quiet.
Those are very good seats.
They're pointing to each other. Okay. All right. I guess we're down to 75. $75. That should be it.
Here's 100 back there.
Stay with the 100. They're still doing hundreds. It's not like New York. Nobody says anything till you get to 50.
Okay, Bernard.
Okay.
Let me just say. Yes, I'm going to repeat that. Make the checks out to IMA/War and Peace Report. I'm going to repeat that. Checks should be made out to IMA War and Peace Report. And we do want to say, I know Bernard would join with me in saying that it's the spirit, it's the dedication, it's the commitment to listener-sponsored free Pacifica radio. It's that commitment. So if you give $5, if you give $10, if you give $20, it's just as important. So we're going to start, I think, the buckets around. And so if you can give $5, $10, it's not important, really, even though we're grateful for generosity, because we're all in this together. And if you give $5 or you give $500, you're still in solidarity with Free Pacifica, excuse me, you're still in solidarity with Democracy Now in Exile, and this money will help Democracy Now in Exile. It will help us bring it back to KPFK. Thank you. Who?
It's tax deductible.
Oh, yes, and it is tax deductible. I'm going to end my part there, Bernard, if you want to come back. I want to just say to you, thank you for your generosity. When Democracy Now in Exile is heard over KPFK again, you can say to yourselves, we played a major role in bringing this outstanding program back to Los Angeles. Muchas gracias, compañeros.
And all I want to say is thank you. Thank you, and give. Continue to give. Thank you very much.
And I will say that those who gave $150, $250, and so on, do go to the lobby. There's the Democracy Now in Exile Howard Zinn speech, and also T-shirts and a few hats.
Thank you
very much, Blaise.
While those buckets are going around, I want to introduce one of the great programmers of our KPFK. Don, you're out there, aren't you? Where's Don? Okay, I want to introduce to you Don Bastani, who's Don is the past president of the Los Angeles chapter of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, and he's the past president of the Media Image Coalition of the Los Angeles County Human Relations Commission. on the board of directors of Americans for Democratic Action, the Southern California chapter, and producer and host of Middle East in Focus on KPFK. He's a strong advocate of campaign finance reform, decriminalization of drug use, and justice for all people, especially Palestinians. Don Bastani.
I am embarrassed at not having been banned or fired yet. It's an honor to have been asked to participate here tonight, especially an honor to have been introduced by Blaise Bonpaine. Now, my assignment is easier than that of most of the other speakers tonight. I was asked simply to, in 5 minutes, tell you the war and peace story of the Middle East, whereas the others had to deal with Pacifica, which is much more complex for me. But the Middle East is bloody. Pacifica is not yet, and I hope it never will be. Not a day goes by in the Middle East when we don't have a reason to weep at the senseless spilling of blood. Today was a big day in Jerusalem. And yesterday, the day before, and the week before, and for 34 years now in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, and in Israel proper. It's got to change. I imagined that Sharon and Arafat each separately phoned me and asked me for advice how to get out of their pickles. Arafat, the leader of the Palestinian people, called and asked, "What can I do?" And I told him, I said, "There are three things you need to do. One, end the violence upon civilians. End the terrorism. But do not inhibit or discourage Palestinians from violent resistance to occupation." I said, "Next, you've got to end the corruption in the Palestinian Authority and the PLO. You're a disgrace to humankind and especially to your people with the degree of corruption that goes on there. Third, I said, you've got to democratize. You started out that way, and then you, as soon as you were elected president, you cut it off. You've got to respect the members of the Palestinian Legislative Council. You've got to respect their legislative decisions. And you have to establish a periodic re-election of the president, even if it means you may be voted out." He said thanks and hung up. And then my phone rang again, and it was Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister of Israel. He said, "Bastani, what'll I do? How can I get things to what ought to be a normal state?" I said, "I'm going to give you multiple choice. I'm going to give you a short-term solution, and I'm going to give you a long-term solution. You take your pick. The short-term solution, you go back into the areas you've redeployed from and reinstitute a total, complete, oppressive occupation, collect all the guns that the Palestinians have, and kill the resistors. Totally recontrol the entire area. That'll end your violence and terrorism problem. Of course, you will have used extreme terrorism to accomplish it. That solution's not going to take you more than a few days into the future. Solution B, your long-term solution, has three steps. Number one, dismantle every settlement illegally placed in Palestinian territories. Number two, pull out all your troops from the occupied territories. Number three, develop commerce between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And that relationship, in an ongoing way, will prevent recurrence of the violence that reached a peak today and yesterday in other areas. They've got to stop, and we've got to encourage them, Arabs and Jews, and we've got to get the U.S., because Israelis are not going to do it by themselves. Do you think we can persuade the U.S. to step in and say to Israel what I've just advised Sharon to do? It's going to take an outside force. Lots of luck, right? Thank you. Democracy now and tomorrow.
Anybody parked in the parking lot of the nightclub at 659 Southwest Moreland, which is about half a block down that way in front of the law school, is about to be towed. You'll have to move your cars within 10 minutes. The owner of the club says he's having anybody at this venue who's in that parking lot towed within 10 minutes. So if you're parked at 659 Southwest Moreland, half a block down that way in front of the law school, you need to move your car. Thanks.
Move your car, man. Also, there's a nice set of binoculars that have been lost, so if you have lost your binoculars, please check it out at the Lost and Found, I guess, in back later. We are about, Karen, is this not true? We're about to have a video. Roy, what are you doing? Come on, Roy Tuckman.
Thank you. I've been a Pacifica listener and supporter for over 40 years, a staff member for about 30 years, and a programmer for about 25 years. And I would like to say that KPFK is the only station in the entire country that bans Democracy Now! Twice a day. I first met Amy Goodman under very embarrassing circumstances. I do a program at night and sign off at 6 o'clock when Amy was on. And I was a big fan. And one morning at 5:40, I got a telephone call, the hotline, the one you answer. And on the other side, I heard, "Hello, this is Amy Goodman." She had called to make some technical thing with the board operator. And I was just awed. And I said, "Amy Goodman, I love you. 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 I love you." "Thank you. I have this technical thing to do, and I have this number and a guest." And I said, "Oh, yes, sir." And that was taken care of. Well, it was okay. She was 3,000 miles away. But a couple of months later, she shows up at the station, and she's there in KPFK. And I was very embarrassed, but She's a very class person and very respect, full of respect. And there was really no problem. And that's one of the things that we do love about Amy Goodman, her respect, the respect that she shows the listeners, the respect she shows the guests, and the respect that the guests show her, the regular common people and the famous pundits. And we do love Amy Goodman. I have her bio. Amy Goodman is a 1998 recipient of the George Polk Award for the radio documentary Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Military Dictatorship, to which she and co-producer Jeremy Scahill exposed the oil company's role in the killing of the Nigerian villagers, two Nigerian villagers on May 28, 1998. They were also awarded the Golden Reel for Best National Documentary from the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. Project Censored selected the documentary as one of the 10 most censored stories of 1998. They were also honored by the Overseas Press Club, a citation they rejected because of the club's agreement that journalists not mention on the, not question the keynote speaker, U.S. Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke, at the awards dinner in the midst of the U.S. bombing of Yugoslavia. Goodman and Scahill co-wrote two articles in The Nation magazine on the Chevron-related killings. Goodman has also won numerous awards for the radio documentary she produced with journalist Alan Nairn, Massacre, the Story of East Timor. Including the Robert F. Kennedy Prize for International Reporting, the Alfred I. DuPont Columbia Silver Baton, the Armstrong Award, the Radio Television News Director's Award, as well as awards from AP, UPI, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Our National Program Director, however, denies that Amy Goodman knew anything about the massacre in East Timor, was not even there, and it was all a lie. Our national program director. In 1991, Goodman and Nairn survived a massacre in East Timor in which the Indonesian soldiers gunned down more than 250 Timorese. The Indonesian military banned them from returning. And so the Indonesian military, in complete agreement with the WBAI management and Pacifica, in banning Amy Goodman. Goodman has reported from Israel and the occupied territories, Cuba, Mexico, Haiti, and was the first journalist ever to interview the jailed U.S. citizen Lori Berenson, serving a life sentence in Peru. Still, Goodman also broadcast the first U.S. radio interview with imprisoned East Timor rebel leader Usana Gusmao. In addition, in her spare time, to her radio shows, her daily radio shows, Goodman speaks around the country on university campuses as well as to human rights, church, and community groups about media activism. She also runs workshops at community radio stations on grassroots coverage, which we need very much here at KPFK, and with the structures that she's built while in exile, it's become more and more apparent that democracy now is not in exile, but Pacifica is in exile until we get her back. Amy Goodman.
am not... I'm not quite sure why I'm being introduced twice tonight, but maybe it's because, as Roy says, we're banned twice every day on KPFK. And we do hope that democracy now will return to KPFK. And I'm honored, I can't be more honored than to be introduced by Danny Glover and Roy of Hollywood. Roy, I love you too. I'm going to speak a little more after the program you're about to see. It's an excerpt of Democracy Now in Exile. While we have been banned from the airwaves of KPFK, we, after September 11th, began broadcasting 2 hours a day. We expanded, although the whole crew has been suspended without pay since August 14th. We went to 2 hours broadcasting the War and Peace Report. And when WBAI went off the air after September 11th, Democracy Now! Continued these broadcasts. We slept at the firehouse where we're broadcasting just blocks from Ground Zero. And we're engaged in the largest public media collaboration in this country right now. We're broadcasting on the internet, WBIX.org, that's WBAI in Exile. We are broadcasting on community radio stations around the country, including in South Africa, as we put up MP3 files on the internet, like Free Speech Radio News, and stations all over can take us down. We're broadcasting on KPFA, the first Pacifica station, upholding the original mission of Pacifica. And I have to say that KPFA has been absolutely incredible. I think Lou Hill, our founder, would be very, very proud. Despite the fact that Pacifica Management in Washington and here in Los Angeles has banned us from the airwaves, KPFA found a way, because the Pacifica satellite originally started as a collaboration between KPFA and KFCF in Fresno, they found a way to sort of open a back door on the Pacifica satellite, and every day they broadcast us to all the stations around the country. So a tremendous thanks to KPFA, KFCF, and the folks at Free Speech Radio News who also have made it possible. Aaron Glantz, who's the producer of Free Speech Radio News, and I hope soon you get to hear that incredible half-hour cast that Robin Jurevich and so many other reporters are involved with around the country and around the world. Aaron came in every morning at 5:45 to KPFA to make sure we got on the satellite. So you're about to see some excerpts in this period between September 11th and now that we have been doing every day. The crew of Democracy Now!, Anthony Sloan, our engineer and music maestro, Chris Abrams, who defied Pacifica and went to South Africa. Imagine, we're talking about defying the original network of free speech and social justice. We were forbidden to go to Durban, South Africa for the UN conference against racism, but Chris went anyway and allowed us to broadcast every day for an hour the Durban tapes, live from South Africa, bringing you the voices of the Dalits of India, population equal to the United States, the untouchables, broadcasting the voices of those fighting for reparations around the world, broadcasting the voices of those when the U.S. walked out of the U.N. conference against racism, the outrage of people around the world, the voices of women from Senegal and Uganda. This was the incredible project we were involved with that you could not hear here at KPFK. And then, of course, after September 11th, and we'll talk about that after the documentary, and we'll see if we can broadcast it simply here, but this is being broadcast on public access cable stations around the country, as well as Dish Network, satellite TV on channel 9415, which is the 24-hour free speech TV channel, and it airs several times a day on that. You can also, by the way, ask for it to be aired on your local public access station, as it is being done, again, on around 50 stations in the country right now. And we hope, by using the internet and by using community radio stations and public access TV stations and satellite TV, to take on CMN, that's Cable Military Network, and really reach out and provide a forum for those voices. I believe the majority in this country who've been marginalized from our airwaves, from the public airwaves. This is Democracy Now! in Exile, the War and Peace Report. Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now! in Exile.
There may be people in other countries who deserve to live as much as those people in the Twin Towers deserve to live.
Today, we hear the speech of radical historian Howard Zinn, speaking Sunday at the University of Vermont before more than 1,000 people.
Medical students take the oath of Hippocrates. You don't know what to do. Something is bad, really bad. You must do something. But the first rule is do no harm. Let's just have to start off with that. You do no harm. We are doing great harm.
All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! in Exile, the exception to the rulers.
Yeah, I'm concerned with our taking the initiative to speak out, even though a certain blanket of intimidation has been spread across the country. I mean, am I exaggerating? Isn't it intimidating when everybody in high political circles and people in the higher reaches of the media, when they all cry for unity and supporting the president, and where, you know, editors of the New Republic say people may be considered traitors for speaking out. You have Dan Rather, Anchorman. What is he anchored to? He's anchored to the establishment. That's what an anchorman is. And he says on national television, Bush is my president. When he says, get in line, I ask, where? Well, this is strange. Here he is, independent journalism. And the idea of journalism is to be an independent voice, an independent critic, not a handmaiden of government, but yes, somebody who represents the public and who inspects the government and does not immediately say, yeah, we're together. And when the president says, get in line, I get in line too. No. That's what happens in a totalitarian state, not in a democracy.
As Bush announced that the U.S. will go to war, many of those who lost loved ones are saying, not in my name. Rita Lazar and Judy Keene both lost loved ones in the World Trade Center attacks. They're raising their voices to call for peace. Rita Lazar joins us from New York.
Others will speak of the history leading up to this horrible event. I don't have the skill or ability to do that. I just want to say something about my brother. You know about his final act. People call him a hero, I don't think he would think of himself that way. A poem he wrote several years ago reflects how he thought about himself. He wrote, "I dreamed I died and went to heaven. And when I got there, they asked me what kind of person I had been. And I said, not so good. So they sent me down to hell. And when I got there, they asked me what kind of person I had been. And I said, not so bad. So they sent me back to earth. That was my kid brother, not so good and not so bad. This country must allow itself to see its own reflection in the mirror of this horror. We cannot continue to think of ourselves as innocents abroad."
Now, we have seen in the media, which teaches us nothing, that 96% are behind the president's foreign policy. I guess we're the 4% that isn't. Let's make that 4% grow and grow and grow. People, we must unite. These little gatherings are the beginning. We must unite. And we must get strong, we must be clean, and if you're worried about all of the things that they're trying to make you scared about, whether it's germs or anything, you want to do something for yourself, take care of yourself, build your immune system, be strong, don't be afraid, and don't be led by the media. We the people are supposed to dictate foreign policy. Right now, our government is keeping us out of foreign policy. That is a direct infringement of our rights.
Right.
Don't just sit around and let them think for us. Be strong. Be strong. Be aware. Wake up.
Yeah.
We have the power. Dreaming, in my dreaming, we'll have an aspect bright and fair. And my sleeping, it was broken, but my dream, it lingered near. In the farm of shining valleys, where the pure air recognized. And my senses newly open, 'cause I awaken into the cry that the people have the power to redeem the world from fools. Upon the meek, the grace is shower. It's decreed that people rule. Oh, people have the power. People have the power. People have the power. People have the power.
We're going to go to Israel right now. We're joined by someone in the Dehesha refugee camp just outside Bethlehem. In our studio, Ziad Abbas is with us, founder of the Dehesha refugee youth camp. Ziad Abbas, can you tell us the latest news you have out of Bethlehem?
The last news is 1 hour ago that the Israeli army killed two Palestinians in Bethlehem area. And still the clashes continue there in Bethlehem. They are still shelling the city, and especially they concentrate in the two refugee camps, Azza camp and Aida camp. Around 7,000 persons living in these two refugee camps, and it's already surrounded by the Israeli army, and some of the soldiers, they occupied the roofs of the houses, and they are shooting anything moving inside the camp. Some families, since 1 week, they are stuck in their houses. They cannot leave the houses. They don't have enough food. They don't have enough water. And, of course, no electricity, because all the time the Israeli army, when they start attack, they attack the generators of the electricity in the Bethlehem city in general. At the same time, Beit Jala city is... face the same problem because the tanks is still there since 1 week now, and they're still searching in the houses, destroyed everything in the houses, and we don't know how many persons they were arrested. But the situation in Bethlehem, which today that you spoke about the massacre in Beit Rima, but I can see there is a massacre in Bethlehem since 1 week, but they do it slowly, slowly. And I believe if Sharon will continue that, it will be a big massacre in Dehesha refugee camp.
We are joined by Manar Farag in the Dehesha refugee camp. Can you tell us the scene on the ground right now?
About the situation here, I can't explain it well because there are no words to explain this hard heaven. But I can say they are killing us every day and every place in Palestine. We are in the jail. We can't breathe. We can't sleep. Our life, it is a miserable life. The children, they don't know about bomb. They don't know about music or any place to play. They know if this bomb or this voice for M16 or F16 or it is a big bomb. But we are not afraid from them. And I say this because I mean it, not like the political people who are always speak, and there is nothing in you or good from them. I hate the politics. I'm just to speak about the reality here, and the reality, it is so hard and it hurts a lot. And it say I speak with you today, but I don't know, maybe now or after I speak or after I finish with you, bomb come here and kill me. But we love the death if it is for the God and for Palestine.
You're listening to Democracy Now! in Exile, the War and Peace Report. We're standing at a rally right near the White House. Thousands of people are here calling for President Bush not to respond to the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon in a like fashion. What's your name? And
James McKinney, retired the United States Army. Mm-hmm.
When were you in the Army?
What's that?
When were you in the Army?
I was in the Army 65 to 68. And then I got drafted, I was drafted then, and then I retired and I re-entered the service. I spent 18 years in the National Guard. Yeah.
So you were in Vietnam?
I was in Vietnam, right.
Why are you here at the anti-war rally?
Well, I just want to voice my opinion on the, you know, I went through Vietnam, and they talk about terror. That was a war of terror. So we went to 10 years of that, and now to hear this president say we're going to go back and start this to fight terror, and the war is going to, instead of saying, well, I'm going to get it over with and finish it, it's going to be over a period of time. And I said to myself, I went to Vietnam for 10 years with this thing, and you're going to talk about doing the same thing all over again? And Vietnam was Vietnam. Now you're talking about the whole world? So, you know, it's just that aspect of mine upsetting me. People have not learned about, you know, what people have gone through. When you mention war to a Vietnam soldier, he cringes and runs under the table because he don't want to hear about it. These people don't know what in the world it's all about. When I say people, that is your people in power and your power structure. And it's really a shame.
No war! No war! No war! We see the issues of peace as being very much linked to the issues of social justice and economic justice. And as long as we have a world where there is such gaps between the rich and the poor, where power and wealth is being consolidated into fewer and fewer hands, we're going to have increasing violence.
Reverend Lucius Walker, can you talk about why you came out today?
I came because it's a time to break the silence and break the call for war, which is gripping the country right now. Those of us who understand that terrorism did not begin on the 11th of September, that terrorism is not the exclusive, you know, tactic of people from any other section of the world, but it is primarily a homegrown phenomenon. It's primarily from the U.S. need to speak out.
War, it ain't nothing but a heartbreaker. It's got one friend, that's the Undertaker. Oh, war has shattered many young men's dreams.
We're joined by Haider Rizvi, who is a UN reporter here in New York and freelance journalist of Pakistani descent. You were beat unconscious in the last week?
Last week, Saturday.
What happened? Where were you?
At 3 o'clock, I was a few blocks away from my home and wanted to buy cigarettes from a grocery store which is owned by a Pakistani, which is just a coincidence. And there were three unknown people outside the grocery store. And they looked at me and said, "You look like Osama bin Laden. Are you from Pakistan?" And I said, "Originally, yes. I wanted to say I'm from Brooklyn. I'm a Brooklynite now." They didn't let me go there. Started beating with kicks and punches. And broke my tooth.
Did anyone come out to help you?
After they had left me unconscious, the grocery store worker came out. Brought me.
And got an ambulance?
Got an ambulance.
It's been over a week, and you've been going sort of up and down and suffering as a result of this. You've been doing a lot of reporting on the war.
That's true.
So what do you make of this?
War and the anti-war demonstrations taking place in New York City, which the mainstream media somehow did not cover, most of the demonstrations here. The first demonstration that took place after this September 11 attack in Brooklyn, there were thousands of people. But mainstream newspapers did not cover it. They are not even covering the anti-war demonstrations taking place in London, in Frankfurt, all over Europe.
In the 6 weeks since the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the mainstream media has flooded the airwaves and newspapers with glib commentary about the nature of Islam. We now turn to Faridi Saq. He's a Muslim scholar who's lived the diversity of Islam from Pakistan to South Africa and developed what many call an Islamic theology of liberation, joining us in our Firehouse studio. Can you talk about how you, as a Muslim and a scholar of Islam, explain the attacks and the deeply conservative variant of Islam practiced by the Taliban and others in the region?
I think that it is part of a fundamentalist mindset. A mindset that, in the case of the Afghans, it's also a combination of tribalism and a mythical sense that religion provides you with a sense of rootedness and essence, a stability, absolute truths in the face of whether it is the vicissitudes of time, of war on the one hand, or of modernity on the other. But I dare say that it is not a mindset that is peculiar to the Taliban or to Muslims. It's a mindset that at its raw manifestations you see in the Jerry Falwells, you see it in the Pat Robinsons, and I dare say you also see it in the discourse of your president. This whole caricaturing of absolute rightness, absolute goodness on the one side and absolute evil on the other side. I mean, really, this is the shades of the same coin. But you didn't ask me about your president. You asked me about Islam. And the reality is that that there are many strands in Islam, as Edward Said says. I, for example, have spent much of my life working against all forms of religious fundamentalism. I don't like the term moderate. I'm not a moderate. I'm a radical Muslim. I am bitterly opposed to all forms of religious obscurantism. I hate all forms of discrimination, whether it is against transvestites or transgendered people or gay or homosexual people or women or black people. And I've spent my life opposing all forms of discrimination. I don't like the equation of an Islam that stands for justice with a wishy-washy Islam that doesn't take positions.
Will you continue to speak out against the bombing?
Absolutely. I think that not because we're going to succeed. You know, Amy, in the years of struggle against apartheid, we didn't fight that battle because we knew we were going to win. We had no idea we would see a non-racial and a non-sexist South Africa in our lifetime. But we fought because our integrity was at stake. And so we're speaking against the war not because anybody is going to listen, but we're speaking against the war for us to retain our faith in ourselves as human beings.
This is a mean world, oh, yeah, to try to live in, to try to stay in.
That does it for the program. Democracy Now! In Exile, produced by Chris Abrams, Brad Simpson, Miranda Kennedy, Anthony Sloan, our technical director, Errol Maitland at WBIX.org. We can be heard on WFMU 91.1 FM every evening at 7 in New York and community radio stations around the country. Special thanks to KPFA and KFCF in Fresno. I'm Amy Goodman in exile from the embattled studios of WBAI. Thanks for listening.
Take this pain and give me freedom. Take this pain and give me freedom. Take this pain and give me freedom. I won't turn back. I won't turn back. Take my arms and hold them higher. Take my arms and hold them higher. Take my arms and hold them higher. I won't.
I'd like to thank you for all your work, particularly your interview with President Clinton.
Oh,
thank you very much. My name's Wally Schultz, and I listen on KUNM in Albuquerque. I live in northern New Mexico, and it's the only independent news that we get.
Amy, I gotta tell you, my name is Bassam Habal. I work with WMBR Radio.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a longtime fan of WMNF in Tampa. Uh-huh. I gotta say, you do one of the best radio shows out there.
A lot of supporters.
Yeah, a lot of
thanks.
Supporters.
Thank you very much.
Shake your hand.
Thanks. Thanks. Keep fighting.
Wow, that was so powerful. I just wanted to say a brief word as well tonight that Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! In Exile has so many supporters individually, organizationally, in every way. And I'm happy to tell you tonight that we have yet another organization that is walking totally and entirely with Amy and with Democracy Now! In Exile. On September the 12th, the morning after the bombing, many of us, I'm sure all of us in this room, knew what was going to happen. We knew what that was going to bring about. And we got together the morning after to prepare for what we hope will be the biggest peace movement this country has ever seen. A group of us, when we got together, we decided to call ourselves the Coalition for World Peace. There are a number of groups that got together within that week to try to organize immediately. And our feeling, of course, is that we have to get word out, as Amy is doing, as Democracy Now! In Exile is doing, in every way possible. We have to get the word out that war is not the answer. So, thank you. We also agree, and we know that Amy has had this on her program so many times, the words of Joe Hill, don't mourn, organize. There is no reason to sit back and say how horrible, how awful. In fact, if television depresses you and watching all of that, turn it off and go out, go to the meetings, go to the demonstrations, go to the vigils, get out. Do not let yourself be depressed for a minute, but start working and organizing. And we want to invite you tonight to walk. We feel we're walking very much with Amy and with Democracy Now! And everyone. In the back, you'll see a flag for all nations, a flag of peace for all nations in all colors. It looks like this. It has some similarities to a flag you're familiar with seeing, but it's entirely different from the flag you're used to seeing. This is all colors, all nations, peace in this world. In the back, you'll see that, and we have our leaflets there for the Coalition for World Peace. And we ask you to sign up, become organized, and become workers for peace. And with that, and with democracy now back in business in every way, we're going to win this one too. Thank you. And now, I'd like to bring up Karen Palmer, who is one of the chief organizers for this gathering tonight. Another great success, and thank you, Karen.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank you all for coming on very short notice. This thing was organized in less than 10 days. And I wanted to thank a couple of people. Farah Davari, right here. Carol LaFlamme. Jan Goodman, I don't want to forget all the any names. Martha Oaklander, Jerry Mamperl, Sheila Pinkel, who designed the program, Kathy Arnold, David Fertig, and you know who you are, the rest of you. I wanted to also take one moment to dedicate this event to the memory of Michael Taylor. I don't know how many of you remember Michael Taylor, but he was a KPFK programmer. Michael Taylor had been a pimp, he had been a drug dealer, he had been homeless when he found KPFK's internship program. He got the training he needed, and he got a new lease on life, he got a new life. And he was terrific. He raised his own money because KPFK wouldn't give it to him to go cover Mumia Abdul-Jamal's hearing in 1995, post-conviction hearing. And he came back, and shortly afterward, he was fired by Mark Shubb, the general manager at KPFK. Now, Michael wasn't going to give up on radio because he had found a new life, so he unfortunately got involved with some shady people to start a micro radio station because he wanted to keep broadcasting, but he went back to his old life to find the people to help him to do that. And these people had him killed because they were not happy with the deal that was going down, and he was murdered. So here was somebody who really made the ultimate sacrifice. This is serious business, you know, this is serious business, taking back the station, and I want to do it in memory of Michael, my friend. I also want to invite you next Thursday, December 6th, noon to 2 p.m., we're going to be outside the offices of Epstein, Becker, and Green, because if you know one of the board members of Pacifica, his name is John Murdoch. And Epstein, Becker, and Green is a law firm, a union-busting law firm, and they've done everything that they can to keep Pacifica out of our hands. So we're inviting you to be there. There's flyers outside. It's in Century City, again, from noon to 2 p.m. I won't take up any more time. Fidel, are they ready? No. So we have an odd situation. We're going to have a group named La Paz play, but Fidel's going to say a few words to you. All
right. Thank you, Karen. Give it up for Karen, too. I want to also thank Amy and Karen for asking me to help out with this event. When I first met Amy, I had told her that okay. Basically, because I used to listen to Democracy Now! A lot, and I teach youth in Watts, and you can't really get youth to sit down and listen to Democracy Now! Or to, you know, any type of news for that matter. It's just, that's just the reality of the way the streets are in our education system. But what I would do is I would tell her, I would thank her, you know, for some of the stories, because what I would do is I would take that information and I would take it back and regurgitate it through hip-hop. Because to me, this is one thing that's been said a lot today is the future of Pacifica. And one thing that we're kind of missing here when we're talking about a community as we're missing the youth. The youth are really the future of Pacifica. And there are many activists and elders here that have a lot to teach us. You guys have been through a lot of struggles being in this very racist country that we live in. And it's it's the gap that we have to begin to bridge. That's one reason why I do my show through hip hop, because hip hop is not something that's just confined to the United States. It is in Mexico, it is in Brazil, Argentina, Cuba, Spain. It's the biggest money seller in Japan. It is the biggest form of music in France, and right here in the United States. So for those that don't know anything about hip hop, I think it's a prime thing that we're gonna have to bridge the gap by learning what are our youth doing. Our youth are angry. Our youth die every day in the streets of Los Angeles. They die every day in New York City. And go to Amy right now. All right. After Amy's done, I'm gonna introduce the future to me of Pacifica. And it's two groups that have been doing work in Los Angeles for a long time. So I'll explain that a little bit later. But let me introduce Amy Goodman of Democracy Now. Third time, why not?
I just want to say how great it was to be here in Los Angeles for the Democratic Convention and to meet Fidel. To have him on the night that the night that Al Gore gave his acceptance speech for the nomination. And there was Fidel, Michael Franti, commenting, giving the, compare this to the talking heads you see on television, on what the Democratic Party was representing and had to say. I think the reason, part of the reason we ultimately ended up being taken off the air because of the effectiveness of the program that we were doing at that time, where for the first time we were on public access television and broadcasting on the internet, on the radio stations as well, getting a lot of major media attention and giving voice to third party candidates in particular. And Al Gore certainly knew the effects of having a third party around when Election Day came along. I only have a few minutes to speak before we're going to end up with music tonight, but I think what we're facing today is that a man who was not elected president has declared war on the world. Yeah, I'm talking about George Bush. We are in a most critical time, and at a time like this, when a national debate must take place, there is an almost complete closing of the door on dissent. And that is why it is absolutely critical that we bust the door open of Pacifica, that we make sure that the voices of people like Fareeda Saq are heard. Fareeda Saq, who wrote the book on being a Muslim, that we make sure that voices like Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, yes, they're more familiar to Pacifica listeners, but almost heard not at all in the rest of the country. So we mustn't take them for granted. As we now have learned, we can't take Pacifica for granted, that this only independent media network in this country will remain independent. We can't take that for granted unless we fight for it. And the fact that you were here last year in these numbers and are back again now shows us that you're there overall for the struggle to realize Lou Hill's dream more than 50 years ago, right? He came out of a detention camp after refusing to fight in World War II, and he said, there has got to be a media outlet that is not run by corporations, that are building a drumbeat for a third world war. There's got to be a media outlet that is run by journalists and artists, not, as George Gerbner says, founder of the cultural environment movement, not by corporations that have nothing to tell and everything to sell. And that's how Pacifica was born, with KPFA being the first station. And I believe it's why KPFA is now defying management, does not honor any gag rule. Gag rule shouldn't be honored. And is there to be the free speech radio outlet that Lou Hill envisioned, and hopefully the rest of the network will be able soon to follow suit. Covering September 11th has been an incredible experience for the whole team of Democracy Now! By the way, the person who put this together was Jackie Suen, taking excerpts of the Democracy Now! Programs. She is our webmeister. Again, I hope you get to go to democracynow.org and you can get some of the tapes that we have been broadcasting, and you can get them online listening, or you can also order them from us. But our producers, Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, who is a free speech radio news producer and came to our rescue at the time that we were in exile and has been working with us around the clock, and Brad Simpson, Anthony Sloan, and the whole video team, a remarkable team that comes from Deep Dish TV and Paper Tiger and the whole independent video movement, with the support of the Independent Media Center in New York and the folks from there and IMCs around the country. Pacifica should be at the center of the IMC movement, and instead it sees it as the enemy. Well, certainly Democracy Now! Doesn't, and understands how critical this movement has been, that didn't start but exploded with the Battle of Seattle, with hundreds of media activists understanding well that if we were going to cover this global uprising against corporate power, that if it was going to be covered, we couldn't see it through a corporate lens. The very corporations that were being protested, like what Viacom that owns CBS and General Electric that owns NBC, Disney owning ABC and Cable Military Network. No, it had to be seen through the grassroots, and so people came together and they took out their video cameras, their cameras, their pens and pencils, and they went to the front line where the high school and college kids were, the young activists who were then joined by the union activists who had come from a stadium, and they sat down and they locked down and they said no to the supranational top secret organization founded in Geneva in 1995, the World Trade Organization. They said, you're not going to launch your millennium round of talks. And they went to the streets and they said to the military that was there, Seattle declaring martial law for the first time in 50 years since World War II. They said, as the Navy SEALs and the Marines, the state troopers, the National Guard, and the local Seattle police moved in on them and sprayed them with pepper spray and hit them with rubber bullets, they chanted, "We are your children." And that chant was heard around the world, in addition to, "This is what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like." And it is absolutely critical that we keep the airwaves open for those voices that represent the majority of people, I believe, in this country and around the world. And then, after that, and 2 years later, we face September 11th. The terrorist attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Yes, here in the United States, we saw the face of terror. We saw the face of evil. And more than 4,000 people are now in a burial ground just blocks from where we're broadcasting at the firehouse. It is a funeral pyre like this country has never seen. It is new for this country for something like this to take place, for thousands of people to be incinerated in an instant. But it is not new to people around the world to experience terror on their home turf. Just ask the people of Chile, or of Guatemala, or of El Salvador, the people of East Timor and Indonesia, the people of Vietnam and Cambodia. Yes, they know it well, the people of Yugoslavia. In fact, my colleague Jeremy Scahill, who used to be the producer of Democracy Now!, now a militant free speech radio reporter. Again, I hope you get to see free speech radio news very soon and to hear it on KPFK. That will truly show there is a new day at Pacifica. Jeremy wrote an incredible piece as he now lives in Yugoslavia, and broadcast also while the bombs were dropping on Yugoslavia. He wrote that on September 11th, he was at a funeral, and when he heard what happened, he was horrified, and he thought there might be some response was, "Now you know how it feels." But the response was the opposite. People came up to him one after another and asked, "Is he okay? Is his family okay? Are the people of America okay?" The response came from the heart, from people who understood what terror is and what terror feels like. And I think that was the overwhelming response from people around the world who knew terror, and ironically enough and sadly enough, knew it because the U.S. government supporting terror regimes in their countries. And these are the voices we've been trying to bring out since September 11th. It's quite incredible to hear Rita Lazar again. Rita Lazar, who was the sister of a man who died at the World Trade Center, Abe. Also, Rita is the mother of Matthew Lazar, who is the historian of Pacifica, and I hope you read his book. His uncle, Abe, died in the World Trade Center. He was on the 27th floor. And he was with his best friend, Ed, who is a paraplegic. And Abe refused to leave until emergency workers got to his friend to know that he would be safe. And as Abe's brother screamed at him on the cell phone, "You can get out. Please leave now." It's an amazing story about the World Trade Center. You know, more than 90% of the people did get out. It is incredible. 50,000 people work there, 150,000 people there in a day, commuters and people who work there and people who just visit there. More than 90% of the people got out, but Abe wouldn't leave. People on the 100th floor got out. He was on the 27th, and he stayed to be with his friend and make sure he was safe, and they both went down together along with everybody else. And as Rita saw what unfolded, Rita, his sister, she wrote this letter to the New York Times that said, "Not in my name, not in my brother's name." And it wasn't only Rita. It was Orlando and Phyllis Rodriguez who lost their son, Greg Ernesto, above the 100th floor. He worked for Cantor Fitzgerald. And they wrote a letter that didn't get published in the newspaper, but was circulated widely around the web. And they said, "Not in our son's name." And then there was Judy Kane. Her husband was a Vietnam vet, a Marine who worked in the World Trade Center. He went down with the towers, and she also said, "Not in my husband's name." There was James Creedon, who's a 911 paramedic. He was injured on September 11th. He went back. He wasn't treated. He refused. He wanted to save other people. He and his co-workers, who were paramedics in New York. And where was he a few weeks later? He was standing on a pickup truck in Times Square with 10,000 people marching against war, this paramedic at the World Trade Center. And he said, "I was trained to save lives, and I don't want to see paramedics in Kabul, Afghanistan, combing through the rubble like I am." I raced over to interview him after he gave his eloquent speech, and I thought I'd have to get in a line with all the other media. He had all the elements of a perfect TV story, if you're a good journalist, right? He had been there, he had been injured, he was trying to find bodies, but he had a little problem. He was against war. And so when I ran over to get in line, I was the first one, unfortunately. He was standing alone in Times Square after he spoke. I asked him if the media had interviewed him. He said they do occasionally, but they never include the part where he says he's against war. And that's true for Rita Lazar and Judy Kane and for Orlando and Greg Rodriguez. You hear the stories of the people who died at the World Trade Center, and we cannot hear them enough. They are heroes. They are everyday men and women who did not deserve to die on that day. And we must hear those stories. We must remember each and every one of those people, because we have to fight together and join with people around the world, not USA, USA, but you and me and all of us everywhere to rout out terror wherever it is. And these people whose stories, their family members you hear and should hear, have a second part of the story to tell, and that is to say no to doing it to people somewhere else. And that's what you don't hear. Instead, they cut away from the human interest stories, the stories of the people at the World Trade Center, to the experts on terrorism. And who are they? They're Henry Kissinger and Oliver North, Larry Wayne Harris, and others. Well, maybe in one sense, the corporate media has got it right. It takes one to know one. And Henry Kissinger, even before President, and it's hard to say President Bush, said it. He was saying, we have to go after the terrorists and the countries that harbor them. We must go after them as well. I started to get nervous. Henry Kissinger is right here in the United States. In fact, he's right in New York. But you look quite seriously at this man's record, right? September 11th also happens to be the anniversary of the death of Salvador Allende, the democratically elected leader of Chile, who died as a result of the rise to power of the dictator Pinochet, who had the full support of Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon and ITT and other U.S. entities. And thousands of people died, like Victor Jara, the great guitarist dragged to the stadium. He was killed. You have, that's thousands of people. You can mark that down under Henry Kissinger's name. And then, of course, Vietnam and Cambodia, 2 million people. East Timor, Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State with Gerald Ford, went to Indonesia to meet with the long-reigning dictator Suharto the day before Indonesia invaded Timor in 1975, gave the go-ahead for that invasion. 200,000 Timorese died, a third of the population. Add that in the column under Henry Kissinger. And then you look at how many people Suharto killed in Indonesia as well. That was, what, 1 million people. And he was going to condone another invasion on the part of Suharto. So you're talking about millions of people. Well, if we're going to go after terrorists, we have to have a single standard for what terrorism is. And it's very simple what that definition is. Terrorism is the killing of innocent civilians. And even though the mainstream media continually says that more than 90% of people in this country are for war, I don't believe it. I would like to hear what the question is that is asked. I've never been called. Maybe one of you have. Has anyone been called? What is the question that they're asking? Because if the media asked people in these random calls, if in fact they ever do take place, do you believe that the killing of innocent civilians should be avenged by the killing of innocent civilians? I don't think the answer would be yes. I believe that more than 90% of Americans, because we are a compassionate people, would say no. I believe that people like Orlando and Phyllis Rodriguez and Rita Lazar and Judy Kane, that they are typical of people here who say that they don't want mothers and fathers and wives and sisters suffering in Afghanistan the way we have suffered here. We stayed in the firehouse from September 11th through the next few days because we were right near Ground Zero. The police, the military were evacuating everyone around, and we didn't want to abdicate our responsibility, broadcasting, hearing the voices of people who are in pain and are also saying we don't want to cause this pain to others. That's the first lesson we learned. We want to minimize pain, not send the reverberations of it around the world. And so we stayed at the firehouse, and I walked out one night, late at night, as the emergency workers were going back and forth, covered in the ash of the World Trade Center, the ash of death. It was late at night, and it was raining. And people had put up all over, and I'm sure you've seen it here on television, the color Xeroxes of their loved ones. And they would say, you know, so-and-so on the 100th floor, if you see him, he was 27 years old, please call his mother. And there was a phone number. And these were everywhere all through New York. In Union Square, which almost became a peace and democracy park, thousands of people debating the issue of war, but the mayor, Giuliani, cleared it out very quickly when he saw was what was about to happen and what was happening there for a few weeks, that this was going to become a democracy park. I saw all these photographs, and people carrying them, people having them up in the rain. And I thought of the mothers of the disappeared in Argentina. They carried the pictures of their granddaughters and grandsons and were asking, where are they? And wrote things like missing, the same way we saw it all over New York. These are the lessons that we have to learn from September 11th, is how connected we are to the rest of the world and how we have to rout out terror. Now, if Osama bin Laden did it with his allies, and he hasn't denied it in the videotapes that you now cannot see on media in the United States, Al Jazeera Network, the CNN of the Arab world, yes, broadcasting these tapes and the images of casualties in Afghanistan, which would turn people against war. And so the media here in the United States is quick to sanitize them or not to show us them at all, and also quick to bomb Al Jazeera in Kabul. And then when a reporter came to cover the Bush-Putin summit in Texas to detain him and arrest him, shooting the messenger, bombing Al Jazeera. Well, we knew it from bombing RTS in Yugoslavia. If he did it, or if there's enough evidence to indicate he might have done it, yes, he's got to be held responsible. And where do we bring him? Well, perhaps to an international court. And he should be tried. But the International Criminal Court has been fought by the Pentagon and the U.S. government, though the majority of the world's countries are for this. We have to have a place where people who commit crimes against humanity are taken. And why does the U.S. fight an ICC, an International Criminal Court? Precisely because they're afraid people like Henry Kissinger will be called to be tried in a forum like that. And so we have to support the formation of an international criminal court for all of these people, including someone like Oliver North. He becomes a buzzword now, but what was he responsible for under the Bush-Reagan years, right? He was responsible, one of the point men, for the illegal funding of the Contras, that band of thugs and murderers who killed thousands of Nicaraguans, defied the spirit of Congress, and there Oliver North got around it, helped to sell weapons to Iran and took the profits of those weapons and illegally funded the Contras in Nicaragua. And Oliver North is there commenting on terrorism. It takes one to know one. And then you've got, and I don't know if you saw this guy, Larry Wayne Harris. I couldn't believe it when I saw him on CNN. I saw this guy talking about bioterrorism. It said underneath, bioterrorism expert. And I said, wait a second, Larry, I'm familiar with this face and this guy from a few years ago. So Chris Abrams, our producer, did a little Lexis search and found that, yes, this is the man who several years ago was arrested with another guy. He was a member of the Aryan Nations, and he ordered bubonic plague in the mail. And he also was arrested for an anthrax case. Now, it is fine to interview a person like this, to get inside, you know, the thinking of a white Aryan racist terrorist type. That's fine. But you have to say who he is. They wrote bioterrorism expert. So we got him on the phone, and I wish you could have heard it if KPFK were broadcasting the War and Peace Report. But I asked him the first question. Mr. Larry Wayne Harris, how many times have you been on CNN? 13 times. I'm a bioterrorism expert. These people who appear as experts, though they may be, have to be challenged. The corporate media has to be challenged. The airwaves that they're using are ours, right? It is not just public radio and public television that use public airwaves. All of the airwaves are public. The corporations are leasing them, and they have to be held responsible and not cheerlead for war, as Noam Chomsky says, as they manufacture consent. They beat the drums for war. When was the last time you saw on one of these networks someone who is opposed to war? I'm trying to think, on CNN, the last time you see this parade of generals that they put on the payroll to debate whether we should go from air war to ground war. And that is it. The other day I saw Gloria Steinem talking about the future of women in Afghanistan, being interviewed by Paul Azan. And she said something that led Paul Azan to say to her, wait a second, this is sort of a side issue here, but are you
actually saying you're opposed to the bombing of Afghanistan? And, I mean, Paula Zahn was right to almost fall off her chair because she had not spoken to anyone in the studio, had even suggested, come near, saying perhaps that in this time that we've moved into a new millennium, there is another way that, as Gandhi says, you know, Western civilization would be a good idea. We need an alternative, and we almost have it. We've almost won back Pacifica, but it is only through your vigilance and your dedication to the concept that Lou Hill and others made a reality in the 1940s that we're going to have it, and we have to be constantly vigilant. We have to put tremendous pressure on the network to ensure that it is returned to the people, the only independent media network in this country, as the space closes for all dissent. Have you heard about ACTA? No, not ACT UP. ACTA. It is the American Council of Trustees and Alumni. Now, doesn't sound like much of anything, but it was founded by, don't worry, it was bipartisan, as we together celebrate the consensus in Washington today. Lynn Cheney, the wife of the vice president, public official herself, former head of the NEH, right? And Joseph Lieberman, the man who ran for vice president in the Democratic ticket. They've just put out a report that is a McCarthyite list of professors and students at places like UC Berkeley and Harvard and Haverford and University of North Carolina and Columbia and places all over the schools around the country where professors dare to say things like, and this is since September 11th, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. I don't even think the professor who was quoted came up with that quote, but there is a list of more than 100 professors and students on this report that say we have, and the report says we must defend Western civilization. It decries the proliferation of courses on Islamic studies in this country and say we have to get back to American history. It is very frightening, especially given who has founded this organization. I believe we were the first to do something on this as we made calls to the professors and students. They didn't even know they were on the list. Of course, I spoke at Scripps College last night. Those students had a very interesting response. They wanted to send in their quotes so they could be included in the list. But it's that kind of creativity that we celebrate on Democracy Now! In Exile. And we very much hope to be back on the airwaves of KPFK very soon on all of Pacifica. And remember, Democracy Now! Is not just a program. It is a whole movement. We are part of a movement in this country for democratic media. It includes the Indie Media Centers, and you can go to indiemedia.org and see the incredible work that they've done, especially at the sites of anti-corporate globalization protest. It includes the people who have fought for a space on cable state on cable networks, right? We rarely go to the public access part of the cable spectrum, if you can call it that, but of cable, the public access channels. If we don't use them, we're going to lose them. And that's why we're bringing together this collaboration. And thank you very much for supporting all of this so that we can continue to bring you the voices of Afghan men and women and international aid workers who were exiled from Afghanistan. I mean, before the U.S. started bombing on October 7th, Afghanistan faced a humanitarian catastrophe of millions of people starving. And then the U.S. started to bomb, and President Bush said it was a humanitarian effort. We were helping the people of Afghanistan. It doesn't surprise me that the man who would have called for the bombing would say this, but to have the media just acting as a megaphone for power unchallenged, to have the president dropping cluster bombs in our name on the people of Afghanistan and also dropping 1 million food packets, right, you know, in the brightly yellow
packaged food, biscuits that they were dropping on the people of Afghanistan, dropping food on one of the most mined countries on earth. International aid workers on the sidelines because they couldn't be in Afghanistan then were saying, stop the bombing. You're killing people just dropping the food packets because they drop on landmines, or kids will run out or adults will run out and they'll pick up the food packets and they'll explode because of a landmine that gets detonated. You have both the food packets that are covered with this yellow plastic, and you have the cluster bombs that are look like little yellow Coke cans, and they're yellow too. And so you not only have people landing on landmines when they go for the food, but they don't know if they're going for a biscuit or a cluster bomb, what they call bomblets. These are what we have to report. We have to describe the pictures that we're not seeing here of people having their limbs blown off. That is what war is. War is terror. Who are the casualties of war? Overwhelmingly anywhere, they are civilians. And then you have, because even with the whiteout of the pictures and information on the casualties, when was the last time you saw a U.S. reporter asking about the casualties in Afghanistan? Even with the whiteout of that information, occasionally pictures do get through. So you have Walter Isaacson, who came from Time, who's now the head of CNN, saying scripts have to be read every time you show a picture of an Afghan casualty that say the Pentagon tries to minimize such casualties or remember this place harbors terrorists. That's what you get on CNN. That was a memo that was leaked. And then you get the Pentagon understanding that if people see civilian casualties, they'll turn against war. Several weeks ago, buying up the exclusive rights to a company called Space Imaging, their Iconos imagery of casualties on the ground. They didn't want people to see those pictures, so they bought the exclusive rights to them. We have to know this because the bombs are dropped in our name. And that's why we need independent media. I was driving with a cab driver the other morning. The firehouse is right next to an army checkpoint that's still up. We have Humvees that sometimes have a little skull and crossbones and a flag in their window, believe it or not, right outside of the place where we broadcast. And there are police there, there are state troopers, there are National Guard, and there are soldiers. And every day we go by, and sometimes we're stopped. And more likely than not, it's like this day when I drove up with a cab, and they stopped the cab driver to ask for his documents. And he was very nervous. He brought out everything, and they then let us pass. And I asked, "How are you feeling?" He said, "This is what it is to be a Muslim in America today." Another night, I got in a cab around 11:30, and I asked the cab driver how he was doing, and he said, "Well, I was just beat up a half an hour ago." He had stopped at a red light. He was Arab-American, and the drivers and the guys made him get out, and they slammed the door on him and told him to go back to his own country. We have to look at the war abroad, what's being done in our name, and we have to deal with the war at home, the attacks on people of color in this country that were happening before September 11th and now are happening with ever greater frequency from just people in this country, and then, of course, with the military tribunals, the government talking about setting up of, quote, non-citizens. And if you're a citizen, if you think that, oh, well, it's just them, think again. Remember that poem from World War II, first they came for the communists, I wasn't a communist, and so I said nothing. Then they came for the Jews, I wasn't a Jew, I said nothing. They came for the Catholics, I wasn't Catholic. The unionists, I wasn't a unionist. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak up. These military tribunals threaten us all. And now there's the discussion of torture. We had Jonathan Alter from Newsweek on the program on Friday, and I hope you get to hear the program one of these days. He's talking about torture. Maybe it's not such a bad idea
in special circumstances. He's considered one of the more liberal commentators, columnists in the mainstream media. He said he doesn't understand why the left has such a mental block against the discussion of torture. I said, is it a mental block or is it international treaties? I don't know. But we have a double job to do. It is to get to the facts, just reflect reality in Afghanistan and here at home, and then we have to deconstruct the media and expose the lies, because the media is the way that people understand most of the world. And it is absolutely critical that we provide a different perspective, that we break the sound barrier, that we be the exception to the rulers, that we demand democracy now. Thank you very, very much.